time for a fun little walk-in chat. Well, I hope you enjoy this walk time monologue as I try to salvage what's left of the sunlight for today. Oh my goodness. I am incredibly sore from Friday's session, which was 2 days ago, and I'm even more sore from yesterday's walk, which was almost an hour. I'm gonna try to go pretty slow and normal today, just to keep moving, but also to kind of try to recover. It's a little chillier than yesterday. I'm definitely feeling the chill. I'm feeling kind of sick. I think I got it from my other half. She's still pretty sick, but I seem to be having it slightly better. Can't really blame it on the nutrition. Can't really blame it on the calorie deficit. I think that's counterintuitive when you're feeling sick. What I think it really is just the fact that, ironically, despite our sizes, I am the more active of the two now. Except for the fact that walking is no obstacle for her. So it's a completely different situation, I guess. Anyways, I don't really know what I want to talk about on these little walks. I don't know how interesting they're really going to be. I have a lot of thoughts rambling around. So anyways, one of the things I've been chewing on is the whole tech freedom thing dead? Like, have we lost the window to actually make serious gains for digital freedom? Because there are a couple of major themes that I think are seriously undermining it. One is probably the most obvious: corporate control and influence over the entire open source ecosystem. I mean, there was a pretty decent report recently talking about how the Linux Foundation is spending so little on Linux itself. And I mean, this is hardly surprising these days, considering how bureaucratized the big open source is. And I had the pleasure of interviewing Sam Smith, who's creating Serenum, which is supposed to be a from scratch reboot of our entire technology stack, at least starting from a RISC-based processor, building his own operating system from scratch. I'm pretty impressed with how far he's gone. So far, he's up to the point where he wrote the Wi-Fi driver for it, so that what he was doing lately to show it off was that in his community's Discord, he was sending messages from his Serenum box on his own written operating system, which I think is a pretty significant and non-trivial achievement. Sam's one of those people that I kind of put down, as he is some flavor of genius, or at least dedicated enough to persist through just the sheer amount of insanity it would take to work through that. I'm only a little bit familiar with low-level programming, so I know enough to know how much of a challenge it is, but definitely not enough to even begin doing it myself. It is incredibly windy today, so I apologize if the wind is pretty terrible. The big thing I'm concerned about is the corporatization of open source, basically hitting a irreversible state, which has a lot to do with the fights over permissive licenses, kind of domineering the culture stuff. All of that is a pretty big deal. And so, setting aside the corporate influence, I think another significant threat to the free and open source software community right now is honestly just economic consolidation across the board. I haven't quite fleshed this idea out totally, but I am convinced we are basically in the throes of Western countries developing serious wartime capacity that has basically been neglected probably for the last couple of decades. And so we're already seeing an incredible amount of economic consolidation in the sense that really, that's all what the COVID lockdowns really were. They were a way to shut down independent businesses while to boost businesses based on Wall Street, like big box stores and other stuff. It was just a direct transfer of market share, regardless of what your beliefs are about the wider phenomenon. At minimum, as an economic event, it absolutely consolidated economic power in ways that were already happening. I don't believe anything that happened during COVID was somehow magically special as far as being worse. I think it was just accelerations of existing trends, because all the bad shit that happened was pretty much already ramping up. For instance, one of the things I'm really focused on is really just medical ethics dying across the board, and that did not start with COVID. But anyways, that's a bit of a segue. But what I really mean by this is how many people are going to have time to develop actually independent software solutions if nobody's got some spare money to actually support those solutions. Like, I'm a huge fan of people putting their money where their mouth is or where their needs are to really support people building great stuff. I've donated to PeerTube, I've donated to KDE, I've donated to many other software projects I actually use on a regular basis. But the truth is, short of like a couple of donation drives done by really big projects, it's not really a vehicle to start up new alternatives. And we do need new alternatives or serious amounts of work put into this stuff, because the feedback I get when I try to espouse or advocate for free and open software is I get people telling me it's too hard, or like, just simply enough, it's not built into what they're already used to. And I think some of that is a problem that they're just gonna have to bite the bullet about. Because I've seen a lot of people saying these days, they're not even using Linux because of Linux, but because Windows and Mac have become so user hostile that it's just, you know, it's a non-starter for many people these days. My own twin brother, who makes fun of me for using Linux, has now installed Linux Mint just because he's finding Windows untenable. So I expect that trend to accelerate, because nobody can convince me Microsoft Windows is gonna get any better. And so I'm very concerned about people's ability to build genuine, you know, user-respecting, freedom-respecting, privacy-respecting software in an age where economic power is so consolidated. But even worse, the cultural milieu of like everything around open source is so turned toxic by these corporations that I actually think that creates a very seriously difficult problem to solve. Because if you can't, say, grow an institution to the size that like can actually build things that are really polished, it's really worth asking how much benefit you can really make. And so the other trend that I think is very devastating for free and open source software, in my mind, is just simply the fact that, you know, you got the Elon Musk on X, you've got Rumble, you've even got Blue Sky now, which are all just big money attempts to stave off any serious independent alternatives. The hunt for a decentralized YouTube has been on for the last decade, since people have been getting tired of YouTube's nonsense. But the problem is, PeerTube already exists. As far as I'm concerned, PeerTube is like the best software that exists in the field. I am convinced that PeerTube is the best software that exists to create a decentralized multimedia ecosystem. But the truth of the matter is that people aren't even really paying attention to it. There's a handful of people I, you know, pay attention to who have actually adopted it. But the truth of the matter is that it's like, it seems so hard because people want like the whole package. Like they want to watch all their influencers on a single platform. And that's why originally I was pretty excited behind the impetus behind Greyjay, because Greyjay has been doing a lot to like have you use one app for multiple services. And I think that model is going to be very important as decentralization actually becomes more feasible, because unfortunately we're not going to build the one holy grail perfect CMS that does web hosting, social media, multimedia, and is easy to set up. Like, I consider that so far away from where we are that it's like, it's worth thinking about, but not worth like committing all your energy to making real when there's more low-hanging fruit to really think about. And so when it comes to the complacency, I feel like there is a serious lack of seriousness when it comes to adopting decentralized alternatives in the multimedia ecosystem. As somebody who has been daily driving AntennaPod to really, like, basically, as far as I'm concerned these days, if you're not on RSS or the Fediverse, I'm basically trying to treat you as if you don't exist anymore. I'm trying to constrain my attention to these purely organic decentralized systems, and I've been doing it at least in part for quite a while now. And the thing is that I find I'm not really missing out on anything, because all I see when I watch, you know, some video on YouTube or some video by like a pretty big influencer, it's like, it's all the same script. It's, here's this shocking thing you need to learn about. I'm going to like do the bare bones minimum explanation that lacks any serious depth. I'm going to cut into a couple of sponsor reels, and then I'm going to end off with some sort of like grifting call to action. I mean, ironically, I guess I was kind of doing that myself when I was recording Cyberfix, which was kind of a way of seeing if I could actually raise money for the Liber Solutions Network by creating an audio show that just rounds up the news. And that kind of ended as a failure. It got me more attention, but it definitely didn't get me more support, which the effort involved, I think, would be better put really just teasing these issues out, because there's so many people just talking about current news. It's pretty easy to pull up news stories and just comment on them passively. Now, some people do a pretty good job at delving into the weeds of it, and those are the people that, despite not being on decentralized platforms, I'll still listen to. Like, I still kind of care about people who do the work, regardless of what platform they're on. But I'm concerned, I've kind of gone on a huge tangent here, but fundamentally, with all the goodwill being basically bought by Elon Musk, because he's like paying people on the platform with ads to shill the platform. And it creates this kind of OnlyFans paradox where people see someone like, I don't know, Tim Pool getting $60,000. I don't know how much he got this month. I saw a screenshot floating around. And the thing is then all the little people, they think they can get that. And by definition, because X has an algorithmic feed, there is a very serious zero, if not negative sum game going on there. Because not only are you competing with people within, say, your own media sector. So like, if you talk about finance, you're not just competing with other finance people, you're competing with like random glamorized TikTokers who like deliver the most basic brain rot because of how the X algorithm works. So like, you're not really gonna be able to get ahead just by buying premium, which is why I have flat out refused to maintain a public presence on X, because I actually don't see the point. Ideally, the excuse is, oh, you have to be on these platforms to talk to people where they are. But I'm like, these platforms haven't worked that way for at least 6 years now. if not longer. The idea that you signing up to X to reply to a couple of people who may or may not actually have people reading their replies is outright madness. And that's why I don't see the Fediverse or even other open web and decentralized media initiatives, I don't see them as like a good alternative. I see them as the only way forward. Because many people are realizing, if you're somebody who refuses to interact with ads, you block them, you do everything you can to make sure you're not loading a single byte of advertisement, if you're listening to influencers that all they're doing is ad rolls, you're basically no better. They're still infecting your mind, even if they're not infecting your computer, and you're still paying attention to media that is ultimately controlled by money. And I feel like X has done this devilishly efficient psyop at convincing people that X is some sort of bizarre free speech platform, when really it's anything but. It's a very highly curated, attention-grabbing media platform that relies on a self-selecting audience. And so you're not going to be doing any outreach on X. You're not going to be doing any outreach on really any of these centralized social platforms, because the meta has changed now. Because if you're a social media platform, let's say you do the whole shebang. You raise money to build a platform, and you do your best attempt at being an honest player in the space, you're not going to have the attention-grabbing attributes that people get addicted to, and so you'll never be able to compete with X. And I have no idea where Blue Sky is going to end in all this. I have a feeling Blue Sky is effectively just going to be left-wing X. I don't expect it to truly refine the model in any interesting ways. In fact, I told William Magos of the Culture War podcast that, not the Tim Pool one, the actual Culture War podcast that I find seriously worth listening to, but anyways, I was telling him that, like, the failure mode of Blue Sky, or really, like, many of these decentralization of media initiatives across the board, is, oh, you're still censored like you were on Facebook, but now you're paying for hosting for your account. And the whole reason I came up with that was because since they started raising interest rates, since they went to zero during the whole COVID nonsense, big tech companies that were capitalized by debt and, like, stock prices going up, something had to give. That's why you saw this mass shitification campaign where you had Reddit raising API fees, you had other companies doing the same, and even Musk went as far as to cut off basically public viewership of the site, which is really insane when you think about it, because what makes these technologies, like, actually wonderful and interesting in the first place is that they're readable by search engines, and they are part of the open web, which is why I'm, like, so solid on the Fediverse being not just an alternative, but the only way forward, or at least something like it. People can nitpick particular implementations, or maybe there could be a better server protocol, but just the idea of having these interconnected services that are able to onboard people and then they can eventually move to their own is such a powerful model, which is why, although I don't like many of the people behind the rainbow curtain, the truth of the matter is that they're absolutely correct that even powerful moderation tools, but more importantly, the ability to migrate your account seamlessly over the network is a very crucial thing to have. Because many people, like even myself, are very partial to the just host your own server. But in many ways, who knows, life situations change. You may be in a scenario where you can host your own server for, like, I don't know, a couple of years, but then, you know, times get tough and you need to reduce costs. So maybe pooling resources with a friend makes more sense in that scenario. And so to me, freedom is really not just about finding what's the best solution and telling everyone they have to take that or the high road, but really, how do you allow people to optimize within the parameters they're stuck in to get in a better place. And that's a great example of that. Another thing I'll give the Mastodon people some credit for is they absolutely at least talk as if they take accessibility seriously. And I factor in not just accessibilities for people with disability, but also like just general user friendliness in general. We can't really expect our decentralized alternatives to really catch on and help anyone if for many people they're just filtered by how difficult it is to use. And I feel like there's a form of elitism going on where, let's say, everyone who's able to figure out the Fediverse on their own is, you know, above average IQ. I'm not like in love with the IQ idea, but just roll with this for a moment. And so if you're filtering people below your pristine IQ level, you're not going to be able to participate in conversations that broadly impact society or actually matter on any level. So like you need to be able to reach down the IQ levels, not just people within your own level. And that's a hard pill for many people to swallow because that brings on a bunch of other problems. For instance, people, I guess, on the lower end of the either time, intelligence, or maturity scales, what ends up happening is they tend to be more aggressive. They tend to bring other problems that are hard to deal with, which is why I mentioned that truthfully, I'm not against building sophisticated or advanced moderation tools. I'm against the very behavior of trying to limit what other people see. But as long as people themselves have the control, or at least the control imposed by the server can be mitigated by people seamlessly leaving, in both those scenarios, it works quite well. Unfortunately, from a game theory perspective, the Rainbow Curtain has absolutely perfected the art of ganging up and bullying smaller instances to play ball. The amount of drama you see on that side, or like one instance that let's just say is on board for like 9.9 out of 10 initiatives, but then they have like one small point of contention with the overall narrative complex. Oh my goodness, they are absolutely left hung to dry as if they were no better than some of the edgy or scary instances out there, which is patently insane. But I feel like a lot of that has to do with the fact that the Fediverse is an owner-operated network that's not outside of our human social dynamics, which really circles me back all the way to my original point. I feel like software, hardware, overall digital freedom is seriously a threat right now, and I don't see a whole lot of reasons to be optimistic about it. In fact, people may have noticed, I've been more or less on a bit of a hiatus from my Libra Solutions network project talking about these issues because I actually think things are incredibly dire and I don't know how to communicate that in a way that doesn't sound like it's over, we need to give up. If anything, I think we need to double down and push harder, be more serious and less compromising with the forces that are part of the problems and trends when it comes to this. The challenge is, I think people who are actually interested in leveling the playing field when it comes to technology is a very small group of people in general that really don't have the resources to help make it happen, which is why I believe the entire ex-Elon Musk psyop was so damn successful, because what it allowed people to do is allowed people to, like, let's say, are like super on board with some of the particular culture war talking points that Elon Musk is advancing. What ends up happening is you're like, well, it's not perfect, but these guys aren't going to get anything done, so I may as well, you know, if you can't beat them, join them kind of mindset. And I think that's quite alluring for many people because they don't understand or have more pressing concerns than the idea that this fight over digital technology is a pretty serious fight overall. And that's hard to really chew on because I think things have never been more dynamic. We have the ability to make an immense impact on the future of digital technology, especially because, ironically enough, the European Union spends so much money really supporting these projects during the pandemic years. Fundamentally, if we want a better digital future, we need to match, if not exceed, that level of support, effort, and dedication that was done by an institution that fundamentally wants to control its subjects. The EU doesn't give a shit about free speech. In fact, they're openly hostile to the very idea that citizens should be allowed to decide for themselves what they're allowed to not only say, but actually understand, research, and seek out as far as information sources. Like, I'm no friend of Russia. I think the entire BRICS alliance has some pretty nefarious tendencies. But the fact of the matter is, if you're just going to label all internal dissent as Russian propaganda, guess what? You're going to push a lot of people into Russia's arms and then blame the victims in some ways. Or it's like, oh, we never represented you. We never cared about your interests. But how dare you betray us? Like, it's just outright madness. And this is the problem right now, where governments across the world, but even entire regional blocs like NATO versus BRICS, are developing digital tools of totalitarianism that are staggering. Like, I find it funny when everybody's like, oh, smartphones are evil. If we just get rid of smartphones, everything is fixed. Well, I'm like, no, that's not even close to the truth. Things can get so much worse, even if cell phones stay as they are. What we saw during the COVID years is the absurd level of public-private cooperation along these lines can absolutely build a level of tyranny, fascism, really communism, whatever the F you want to call it. It's not going to map onto that perfectly, but a level of authoritarianism that is staggering to imagine. And the problem is, I really don't think regular people, much less dissidents, have any serious capacity to challenge this because we're not serious at all. People are so freaking excited about Bitcoin hitting 100K as if that itself is some kind of major victory. Believe it or not, the bad guys who are running this global fascism coup are just as responsible and just as, you know, they benefit from Bitcoin going up just as much, if not more, than the quote-unquote freedom fighters who are obsessed with Bitcoin. I'm not even bearish on the price. If you want to talk to me about Bitcoin as a financial asset, I'm all willing to entertain ideas that it's going to go to astronomical figures. But if you actually care about the objectives that are crucial to properly decentralizing technological power, I don't believe Bitcoin in its current form is, or truthfully ever will be, useful for that again. And that sounds incredibly harsh, but I am so much harsher on other blockchain projects across the board. Not because I don't think they have any value, but the fact of the matter is, it seems like Monero, and with the exception of some other crypto coins that are much smaller, very few people give a shit about privacy. When, let's be honest, The online privacy fight when it comes to digital technology is a very difficult fight. One can even ask the question, what is the point of building private cryptocurrencies if you can't properly secure your own system? And this is a non-trivial problem, because people don't want to face that question, because they kind of want to like maintain this privacy theater of, oh, if I do this, then I'm protected. But I'm gonna drop a pretty megaton black pill for you. It's really not enough. It's not going to work. It's just going to delay the inevitable. And this is not to say those initiatives aren't worth doing. If you're somebody who's using Gmail, switching to Proton Mail probably has some real downsides, but let's be frank, at least you're moving in the right direction and you're starting to understand what's at stake. And in my opinion, that is way more important than your individual technological setup. If anything, we need to take a serious look at devices from the damn transistor level. And guess what? That's gonna require training, educating ourselves, but more important, large amounts of people to actually participate in this system. And guess what? The economic bandwidth for that just doesn't seem available. It's really nice that the guy who bankrolled Futo, some rando billionaire, seems to be very interested in this mission, but I would argue he doesn't have the resources to single-handedly fix this himself. I mean, it's really wonderful and amazing that he's trying, and I support Futo for that reason, but at the same time, if we're going to pretend that Futo itself, or much less the weird, sketchy blockchain investments, are going to be the cavalry that saves us, it's fucking game over. It is nowhere close to the amount of effort required to stave off the digital enslavement grid that is being built by governments and corporations alike. And this is a huge part of the problem, because I think we are already seeing the narrative push where people basically just want to choose a corporate master and they'll live with that because, well, it'll be more comfortable than trying to resist. And this is why I am so damn pessimistic about the future of digital freedom. Because what the whole Elon Musk X operation showed me is just how shamefully low prices you could buy people with. All it takes is a good year or two of some super overt, thinly disguised, insanely over-the-top parody tier pandering, and then wow, people basically act like you've secured them for life. And the truth of the matter is, that's not true at all. Anyone paying serious attention to what X is doing knows they are complicit in censoring alternative voices for structural but also deliberate reasons. And this is a huge challenge, because the people who are being whipped up in this are a population that in theory should know better. A lot of people are kind of taking the piss out of conservatives who have basically betrayed their values during this Trump election and basically are like, you know what, the power is here, we may as well use it. And it's really hard to blame them in the sense that it's all good, it's all well and good to appeal to people's values when those values are on the map. But if you're going to do what I consider the left has done for the last 12 years, is effectively the same thing. We have the power, so fuck you. It's no longer hypocrisy at that point. It's playing the damn game that has been established for well over a decade now. And so, in my mind, if you actually want to reestablish liberty, whether it's digital, whether it's political, whether it's economic, whatever the hell it is, in our Western countries, you have to work on the fundamental social level with the pure solid reality that people are more than happy to profit or secure themselves at the expense of screwing over other people. And this is a really hard fight. I'm going to be honest, many people point out that's just the human condition and it's not going to change anytime soon. But I would push back a tiny bit and argue that these things exist in degrees. Just because it's human nature to do terrible things, or it is inescapable in our biology that there will be drives to do terrible things, that does not mean you can't moderate or reduce people's willingness to actually engage with it, be it either structurally or, more importantly, by actually raising people's awareness of the overall costs of these activities so that you can reduce them. I agree you will never entirely reduce people's desire to tyrannize and profit off other people's suffering. But the truth of the matter is, if you as a society can make it way less attractive as a activity because you'll punish it harsher, or by making it more socially unacceptable, again, I'm not saying it'll go away, but I'm convinced it will be drastically reduced, so it's still an important metric to think about or make effort to change over time. And this is one of the frustrations I have with a lot of these discussions, because everybody's obsessed with all or nothing discussions. It doesn't matter whether we can make reasonable progress on X, Y, or Z objective. All that matters is whether I can do a thing that will solve the issue entirely. And as somebody who's been doing a really complicated endeavor, which is my own weight loss, going down from over 570 all the way down to now I'm about 500, but I still have a long way to go. There is no one thing that will fix my ability to get down to the weight I want. Not only do I have to do a wide variety of things to manage my intake and nutrition during this time, but I also have to make sure I'm exercising. I also have to make sure I'm staying sane. It's all well and good to lock in like a robot and do everything you're supposed to, but if you're not going to be able to maintain it, it doesn't matter at all. And those are just three very surface level factors. There are other factors as well that you can like dig down into the details. And in my opinion, any sufficiently complex problem, but especially something as big and ugly and long-standing as human tyranny, is going to require the same level of complexity. Which is why, if somebody else champions a different issue than you, or has a slightly different perspective or approach, you're not supposed to lambast them as useless for the fight, because you don't understand the big picture enough to make that case. Over the last little bit, I have been party to many conversations of people nitpicking various activist goals and what, you know, who's selling out, who's making a difference, who's betraying us all. And the truth of the matter is that no single person is going to make or break the fundamental difference. It has more to do with how are people working together to build things that matter. Which is really fundamentally going back to my original point here, where I think while software, hardware, and digital freedom is in a really terrible spot right now, I actually think things are bleaker than they've ever been. But that doesn't mean we should stop or give up. I actually think there is also way more opportunity, way more ability to have a real impact than has ever existed before. And that's the problem, is that the game hasn't gotten better or worse. It's just changed. Now, it is no longer sufficient to just say a lot of nice words and hope a corporation blesses you with a benevolent grant to build, you know, more excellent free software. In my opinion, that age has effectively passed. Now it's going to take people themselves figuring out how to actually independently fund, support, educate, all the fundamental things that go into making a better digital future. And it's way bigger than many people want to admit. So I highly recommend, regardless of what your stake in this fight is, you consider broadening your perspective on how big it is. And really try not to get into petty fights about people with different politics than you, people with different ideas than you, people who have different software preferences than you. My opinion is, if you really understand what we're up against, it is way worse than just people running the wrong window manager or people voting for the wrong party. The fact of the matter is that things are so dire, very serious and controversial differences need to be not only put aside, but basically you need to work with people despite that. And I'll be the first to admit, that's not easy. And I totally understand the hurt, the rage, and the frustrations that people have built up. And this is not unique to either side, either faction, or whatever persuasion you want to be a part of. Because the truth of the matter is, neither side of the culture war actually has a monopoly on real progress. And that's been the lie of the entire culture war saga, is that people build these coalitions and they say, join our coalition, we have a monopoly on real progress. And in my opinion, this election should be the most obvious sign to people that that's complete nonsense. You have, really, no matter who would have won the American election down in the States, their own supporters were going to be betrayed in pretty significant and egregious ways. And the problem is, people love to think about the optimism, they love to have the hope, but the fact of the matter is, a system is what the system does. The US government is a very particular machine, and simply exchanging figureheads holding the driver's seat of that machine is not going to fundamentally alter how it works. And so I would encourage you to really de-escalate any hatred or issues you have with people on the other side, because they are in very much the same rut you're in when it comes to the future of digital freedom. I think it is so important we take a serious look at how bad things are and how much opportunity there truly is. The fact of the matter is, there is way more opportunity to actually get things done, but unfortunately, not enough opportunity to make money off it. So honestly, one of the things I'm considering is I just need to figure out how I can be able-bodied enough to work as a janitor and do programming in my spare time. Because the fact of the matter is, I do not believe that free open source software is viable in a truly independent fashion in anything other than just pure charity work. And this is why I think some of the smarter people who are even on the left politically are starting to realize how powerful free and open source software is as a public good. And I would highly recommend seriously trying to understand what that means, because it's a serious game changer to how you want to make progress moving forward. Now, I've spent a lot of time talking my ass off, but I have to confess, I have been failing you guys. Anyone who's still listening, I need to sincerely issue a heartfelt apology for the fact that I've been trying to build an RSS reader to up my own programming chops. And the truth of the matter is, weight loss is a very difficult and mentally draining journey, and so I have been unable to make the progress I would like, and so this is something I am telling you I am not avoiding. I have serious intention to double down on this and work harder at it, but you'll have to bear with me, because I would absolutely like to be further along than I am. And so my hope, if anything, my New Year's resolutions for 2025 are absolutely going to be spending more time programming, because again, I actually don't think it takes a lot of skill to build something meaningful. I think it's all about, do you have the understanding of the problem you're trying to solve? Do you have the creativity to figure out how you're going to do it? And then lastly, do you have the drive to bring it to completion? And I will admit, that last part is the thing I am struggling with, because my mental energy to lose the weight and do everything I'm trying to do is a very constrained resource. And so I just want to encourage any of you who are still listening, can't imagine why, I really hope you've enjoyed this walk with me, but fundamentally, I really want you to consider how you can build a small tool that will actually make meaningful progress on the digital landscape, even if it itself is not going to change anything. If anything, I think the most important thing to consider is just showing people that it is possible to participate in the future by taking action. And so that's really what I wanted to impart on everyone today. Thank you for joining me for this walk, and I hope you have an excellent day.